Hello, Governor.
I really enjoy saying that to you. You have no idea.
I enjoy hearing it.
You're the only British person I know.
Yeah. I know I'm like a kick ass of the stupid joke, but never mind.
It's like every television stereotype ever. Hello and welcome to CultCast, the best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. My name is Arifun Elijah. I'm here with Leander Caney, Buster Hine, and we've got a new guy here today, one of our writers, Alex Heath. How's it going, Alex?
It's going good.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So we've got another show. We already released episode 4. I almost forgot. Just a couple days ago. But we thought, since we all got our iPads yesterday, we'd do a very special mega iPad episode where we just talked about the features that we liked and our impressions of the new iPad, since we actually have them in our hands now. So before we jump into the features that we liked, didn't like, let's talk about how you guys got them. Alex, did you go wait in line, or did you order it online?
Well, I pre-ordered right after the event, whatever it was, on March 7th. And then I got my main iPad then. And then I decided that there was a authorized Apple reseller in my area that was going to start selling them at midnight, right before launch day. And so I decided to go up there. There were actually a few writers there that I knew online that were going to be there. So we all went up there and stood in line for a little while, and I didn't think I was going to get one, but then I ended up caving and getting one and just got a really basic model and got that home. And so now I'm sitting here with three iPads.
So are you going to sell a couple of them?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm
going to put a couple on the black market here soon.
Yeah, but I heard that a lot of stores still have plenty of stock, so I wonder if you're going to be able to sell it easily.
Yeah,
you might have to return it.
I don't know. I'm hoping Craigslist will, you know, I feel like there's some people on Craigslist that may not know what's up, and hopefully I can. But if not, I might just hold on to it until maybe supplies do go down. I don't know if they will, but, you know.
Don't they tend to just increase?
Well, I don't know.
Otherwise,
the guy can hold out.
Screwed.
I know. I'm screwed. I may just sell it for what I bought it for and just not. I don't know.
Well, the way to do it is to sell it overseas, I think. You know, where supply is limited, so you got to find some way to get it.
Oh, yeah.
The Middle East or Russia.
Right.
I need to take a trip to the Netherlands.
Buster, you went and bought one at Walmart, right? Even after you had pre-ordered one online?
No, I tried to. I went to Walmart at like 11 o'clock, and there was all these Asians from China, and they were like, and I went and talked to them. I was like,
oh, I thought you were joking. You're serious.
Yeah, well, we buy it and then we sell it back home for a lot of money. And I was
wow.
like, oh my gosh, you bastards.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I pre-ordered two, and then I got jealous of everybody at the cult of Mac chat room talking about their new iPads. So I just went to the Apple store and picked one up in the morning.
Yeah, I just pre-ordered mine. I didn't really want to wait in line. And plus, my credit card gives 5% cash back on Apple purchases. So I got, you know, like $35 back. That was pretty nice.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, paid for the sales tax.
Yeah.
I did actually kind of want to go to my local Apple store and hang out with everyone in line. You know, it is fun. If you've never done it before, it's a lot of fun. Everyone has a really good time. But, dude, it's brutal. I mean, getting up at like 4 in the morning or being there all night for a new iPad. I mean,
yeah.
I've done that before. What?
This time it's all been totally upended because, you know, the conventional wisdom was that you had to pre-order and, you know, get in fact, you had to sort of get a really early pre-order, like in the first couple of hours.
Yeah,
the lines, you know, where they were going to sell out, and you know, it was going to take 2 or 3 weeks if you didn't get in that first batch of orders. And this time it was totally the other way around. It was like people who went to the stores got their iPads first, and people who pre-ordered had to wait, you know, for the UPS guy to show up.
Yeah, it's bizarre too, because I am hearing that the stores have plenty of stock still, but the online orders are 2 to 3 weeks out.
Right, well, because they diverted all of their stock to the stores, that's why. So so that they could make sure they have it on display in the store so you could get it.
How interesting. Well, hey, once we all got our new iPads, we opened them up and we had to get them set up, right? And basically once you open it, you kind of have two options. You can set it up via iCloud or you can set it up via iTunes. Alex, Buster, you guys set your iPads up as new devices, right?
I did, yeah.
Do you? Yeah. Oh, I guess you don't have an iPad. You didn't have a previous iPad though, right, Buster?
Yeah, I did. I had the iPad too. I sold it like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So why did you guys decide to do it as a new device as opposed to just importing your backup?
I guess I don't want all of the... I like it just as a fresh new device. I guess I just don't like all of the legacy apps and the junk that comes with it. I don't know. What about
all the folders and stuff that you've set up? Like, does that stuff carry over?
What kind of folders?
Well, like, you set up folders to keep your apps in, you know, so that they're all organized. Oh. Do you do that?
I don't think this is the first time Buster's heard of it.
Are you serious? Buster.
What?
Have you heard of folders?
What? Is that like... Is it when you put an app on top of an app?
That pretty much answers my question. Alex,
yes.
Why did you set your device up as a new device? Because it sounds like you actually knew there was an option.
Yeah, I'm aware of folders, actually. Yeah. I use them.
I do, too.
They're great. They're lots of linen. But no, I always set up new devices as fresh installs, and really, I recommend that you do that. You know, every few restores. You know, if it's just a small update and you want to keep everything, that's fine. But if you're say upgrading from a pretty significant iOS update, or you're getting a new device, it's always good to have a fresh install because you just clear everything out. I like to start fresh, and I'm kind of obsessive compulsive, so I like all my folders in one way and all that stuff, but I also like to see what works better over time. So when I get a new iPad, I install it as brand new, and then I can just add all my stuff on top and just see what I like, see what I still use. It's a perfect opportunity to say, oh, I don't use this app anymore. I don't need this.
Yeah, and, exactly.
Otherwise, you've got folders and folders and pages of stuff that you probably won't use. And so every time I do it, I get to kind of consolidate my experience and also get a fresh install, which is just smart to do.
Yeah. I totally agree. I love doing fresh installs, but man, I have so many folders that I already have set up, and to lose all that is such a hassle.
Well, the biggest problem is all your settings. You know, like you have to re-enter all of your passwords, all the usernames, all the credentials.
Exactly.
Apps you made. I mean, I did like an idiot. I did it as a fresh install because I was just rushing through it. And didn't think twice about it. I actually did it because, like Alex said, I wanted to start afresh. I mean, there's a lot of apps on there I didn't use, but now I'm kind of regret that because now I'm having to retype in everything.
Yeah, and redo all your folders too.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I do when the first thing I do when I do a fresh install or get a new device is I literally take 60 seconds to go into settings, turn the stupid keyboard clicks off, the lock noises, that drives me crazy, and that's pretty much it. Those are like the only like system wide things that I hate. I also turn off the ask to join networks for Wi-Fi because that annoys me. But so I turn some really basic stuff off, and so that's taken care of. And then basically it. I enter in a keyboard shortcut for my email address so that when I'm entering in all my logins, I can just, type, mail with two M's, and it'll just paste my email in so that when I'm logging into everything, I can do it pretty fast. And it takes about 2 or 3 minutes for me to get back on, fully operational.
Yeah, wow, that's a good idea. The shortcuts, I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the most underrated iOS 5 features is that you can have shortcuts for your email, and I wouldn't recommend it for your passwords, obviously, but for just about anything.
And by shortcuts, of course, you mean just setting up those short little words that you can
type,
and then it creates a whole sentence or whatever that you want.
Like text expander on your Mac. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Well, I'm the only one that restored a backup. Because I didn't want to lose all my crap. I have like 80 folders and everything's sorted by folders, and I don't want to lose all that. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to restore from backup. And you basically have two options. You can do it from iTunes, you could do it from iCloud. And I decided to do it from iCloud because I had everything backed up there and I'd never tried it before. And I got to say, it's not a great user experience. I don't think iCloud's quite there yet. I have pretty fast internet, and it took my iPad probably 2.5 hours to get set up. And that's forever, man. I mean, it's just downloading. First, it downloads your backup, which is all your data and everything. And then it starts downloading all your apps and your folder structures and all that other stuff.
Yeah, so, dude, but what apps do you have? That's the thing. It's 2 hours. Yeah, if you have, like, Infinity Blade, then yeah, duh.
I mean, I have games that are big. I just have – I mean, I really don't know why it took so long, but I know that I have, you know, like, really great Comcast internet. And then at the end of the process – I got a little pop-up notification that said your iCloud restoration could not be completed. Some items may be missing. But it didn't tell me what they were. So I have no idea like what got moved and what didn't. I'm just going to have to start using it and find out. So if you are doing a backup, my recommendation to you would be first back your previous iPad up to iTunes and then restore from iTunes. I think it's going to be a lot less hassle. And it's going to go a lot faster too. I mean, it just takes forever doing it from iCloud. And this is one of my biggest problems with iCloud. Like, I can only imagine if you're doing like a MacBook Pro, you know, restoration, how long that would take. And if you didn't have good internet, I mean, my gosh, out there, you're in Kentucky, right, Alex?
Yeah.
What kind of internet backwards you got out there?
Man, we got some download speeds, man. Some megabytes.
Megabytes. So, just word of the wise, if you are restoring, I would go the iTunes route. Hey guys, let's talk a little bit about the features. Everyone knows what the new iPad has. It's been talked about ad nauseum on the internet. But I kind of thought that maybe we could kind of go through the new features, and just talk about what we thought about them. Let's start with the Retina display. This is obviously the biggest feature. And Alex, why don't you tell me what you think of the new Retina display?
Oh, it's magical. It's beautiful. It's amazing. It's incredible. I'm sorry, I was watching the keynote. It's good. You know, I got two of them now. So I think my exact math makes that a trillion pixels instead of a million. But no, it's good. You know, I've been trying to think about how to put it into words because I don't know. I think the best example is if you had the iPhone 3GS and then you upgraded to the 4 and the Retina display on the 4, and how huge of an upgrade that was, and how it was like, you know, putting glasses on and you're like, oh wow, this is what a screen looks like, and then the other one just looks like you never want to look at it again. And you know, I don't know. I don't want to say that I'm disappointed because the screen's great. But, you know, I don't know. It's not as dramatic of a change for me as it was when I upgraded to the iPhone 4. Maybe it's because the screen's larger, viewing angle's different. But I don't know. Like, when I saw it in the store at midnight and they took the, you know, curtain off, and I'm like, what? So is that it? You know, because I couldn't even really tell at first. I think the hype machine kind of makes it better than it is. But I mean, it is tremendous. I mean, it's an amazing breakthrough. You know, what Apple's done with how they place their pixels and stuff is great. But at the same time, it's not this like, you know, looking into a crystal ball, you know, like something unimaginable. I mean, it really just looks like putting glasses on. I mean, it's just kind of a crisper overall deal. And it's not even as dramatic, in my opinion, as upgrading from the 3GS to the 4.
Yeah, I would say that upgrade especially. Leander, what do you think about it?
Yeah, it absolutely is not a dramatic upgrade. It is a beautiful screen, and it is very nice to look at. But to be honest, you know, I've been trying to compare photographs on the iPad 2 and, you know, the new iPad, and I honestly couldn't see a difference. Video, HD video doesn't look any different. It looks just as good on the iPad 2 as it does on the iPad, the new iPad. You know, text maybe is a bit crisper, but I didn't think it was that bad on the iPad 2 anyway.
Yeah, I will say one thing is, what the first thing I did is I went to Apple.com and then I zoomed in on some text because I just wanted to see. And what Leander was saying about the text is true, that it is a lot crisper. That's one of the main things for reading and stuff. You can zoom in quite a bit. And I compared it with my iPad 2 side by side. And the pixelation is, you know, much more on the iPad 2.
Buster, what was your impression?
Yeah, pretty much the same as Leander and Alex. I thought it was, you know, it's obviously a really nice screen. It didn't, you know, I didn't have a nerdgasm
Yeah, I have to echo what you guys have been saying. This was really surprising to me. I mean, Leander, just like you, I actually kind of had a hard time telling the difference between my new iPad and my iPad 2. Now, I don't think that's to say that the Retina display isn't fantastic. It is. I think that speaks more of the quality of the iPad 2's screen. I think that was really high quality.
Yeah.
And also, there are a lot of apps that just don't take advantage of the Retina display yet. I mean, I used some Retina display apps, some games, and those were noticeably different. But even those, I mean, if you had set me down and given me an iPad and one was a 2 and one was a new iPad, I'm not totally sure I'd be able to tell you which was which. Right. So the Retina display is great, and especially for text, you can notice a difference, but I don't think it's nearly as dramatic of an update as a lot of the previous or the reviews that have come out have said they are. Like, there's been a lot of just like dramatic, like people who are like, oh my gosh, this, it's amazing, magical, all those words that you were using, Alex, except they were serious. And yeah, I have to wonder if maybe they were just doing that for entertainment purposes. It's like, that's what they're expected to say, so that's what they say.
That's they're also nother, early reviewers, so, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole nother issue for me, is I really think, especially early reviewers, you know, they drink the Apple Kool-Aid, and, you know, some, you know, I read reviews that were like, I can't even put this into words.
Yeah,
like,
this I can't even so articulate how beautiful this is. And I drink the Apple Kool-Aid. I love Kool-Aid. But I was surprised. I was like, man, I and I thought it was going to just be me when we were talking. I thought you guys were all going to be clowning on me for not, you know, slobbering all over this thing. But let me ask you guys this. I opened up the box, took out the new iPad, and one of the first things I noticed was this thing is significantly heavier than the iPad 2. I mean, I know realistically speaking, it's not heavier. Like, when you're looking at the specs, you're like, oh, well, it's only 3 ounces. But it feels a lot heavier. Leander, did you find that to be the issue for you too?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. It feels as, you know, it is heavier. Those few ounces makes a big difference. You know, it's like, holding the iPad 1 was, would actually sort of tie your arm, when I was trying to read it, you know, in bed or whatever. I like to read, you know, read in bed. And
Me too. And
the iPad 2 made a big difference, because you could, you know, I could hold that up for hours at a time and not, you know, not get uncomfortable. Now the new iPad, yeah, it's like holding back to the iPad 1.
Yeah, it is. And like you said, like, those few ounces don't sound like a lot, but they make a big difference. My new iPad feels significantly heavier than my iPad 2. And what about the thickness? I mean,
it's chubbier for sure.
Yeah, it is. And actually, my new iPad doesn't fit in my iPad 2's case. It's a little too bulbous. Have you guys noticed any weight issues or size issues, Buster?
Yeah, actually, I thought it was just me. I was like, oh man, this feels a lot heavier, but it just said that same thing, because I thought 3 ounces, I shouldn't be able to detect that, you know.
Yeah, right. I thought the same thing, but maybe we all need to go to the gym and not worry about the extra 3 ounces. Let's talk about the performance. I know, theoretically speaking, the new iPad actually isn't supposed to be that much faster than the iPad 2. It's basically supposed to, you know, that extra speed boost they gave the graphics chip, the new A5X chip that they're putting in the new iPad, is basically just supposed to handle all the new Retina display stuff that's happening. So it's not supposed to be any faster. And actually, I've seen tests that show it's really not that faster. But I'll be honest, it feels faster. Is it just me, or do you guys feel like maybe the iPad 3 is a tad faster?
I thought it was actually, I don't know, I felt like I was in an app yesterday and it was kind of clipping a little bit, which maybe it was just I had too much stuff going on. I don't know.
Well, I've actually read some reviews of people who said that, like, in high graphically intense games and stuff, they found the same thing. It was kind of starting to lag just a little bit. Is that what you're talking about, Buster?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I hope that doesn't end up being the case. Camera,
maybe because it hasn't been optimized, you know, that app, right? Does it do you think it needs some code tweaks? Maybe
it could.
Well, Infinity Blade 2, which I thought it's already
that's been
ready to go,
right? And it probably doesn't actually, there's probably a lot of rubbish baloney, right? It probably doesn't need a code. The whole point is, you know, it should run, if it's a faster chip, it should run applications faster.
Yeah, well, especially because is Infinity Blade 2, that's not a Retina application, is it?
Yeah,
it's using, I think, vector imaging, which basically allows it to be like
scalable
Retina. Yeah, scalable, exactly.
Gotcha. Camera. Buster, I think you're going to echo my sentiment here. Huge improvement. I mean, you said you were surprised by this, right? Was that you?
Yeah, I did. I don't even really care to have a camera on my iPad, but I was surprised that it's actually a pretty
big improvement.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's good. It's a no, it's a huge improvement. I mean, the iPad 2 camera was just utter crap. But I mean,
it's it really was. Yeah,
it's still not that great. You know, like it's not. I mean, okay, the photos on Apple's website. I would pay somebody good money to replicate that because
I could replicate that for you, but you'd have to like give me lighting equipment. I mean, those are like professional photographs taken in the most perfect situations.
Yeah, and I feel like they had a little retouch, you know. But
oh, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. But that's to be expected, right? It's marketing material.
I think it's a pretty good camera. It's my kids. You know, we use it. The kids use it a lot for video, and it doesn't. It performs okay. You know, it's not bad. It's like a good point and shoot.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Leander. I actually think it's a really big improvement. I mean, as somebody who doesn't even use their iPad camera very often, who does?
Yeah,
I was taking picture in low light situations and stuff, and not only is it a better all around camera, it's much better in low light. And usually in low light images, you get a lot of just like color noise that's just like speckled and stuff. And the iPad 2 camera was terrible. The new iPad camera is a lot more beautiful in low light situations. Like when you get noise, the noise itself is a lot more beautiful. So it doesn't make your images look as crappy like they were taking on some webcam in an old laptop from 1992. Like, they've improved it remarkably. And I don't know if that's going to mean that anyone's going to use it more. I think that older people will, because now it's actually something that you can create, you know, beautiful pictures and video with. Wouldn't you agree, Leander?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the whole point. You know, it's a really good device now. You know, it's got a great screen and a great camera, and it's so portable. I think you'll start to see people using a lot more, you know, out in the world, you know, and you're snapping. You know, if you're using it in a cafe or something like that, you know, it's easy to snap a picture, easy to do some video conferencing.
Yeah, for
connection now.
For video conferencing, I totally understand, but I mean, who is going to use this thing as a point and shoot? I mean, really? Like, I mean,
Spike Lee, on Barack Obama.
Apple has got the world thinking that they're going to stand around with this, like, you know, 9-inch thing, a slab of tablet, and take pictures. And I'm like, you look like a dork.
Well, you do now. You do now. But will you in 2 years? I mean, is this going to be something where people are like, oh, it's just, remember when we didn't used to do this with our iPad? It's like, no, it's like every video of a kid blowing out candles on his birthday cake is going to be filmed with a new iPad.
Right.
I can see that happening. I mean, they're selling these things like crazy. These families who are buying these are going to use these for that kind of, like, right, you know, filming, yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm gonna side with him. Internet the other day, you never see anybody in the Apple promotional videos actually holding the iPad and shooting it. You don't see that look. You just see it like from their point of view, because they don't want you to see how
yeah
stupid
there's
you
probably a good it. Reason they don't show some dude holding it up taking pictures.
Yeah. And I mean, if I've got my iPhone 4S with me and that thing's got a sweet camera on it, you know, I'm gonna record video and do, you know, and take photos with that, just because it's easier to hold and, you know, it's got a better quality.
Sure, okay, but I'm just going to put this out there. There's a lot of people that don't have iPhones. There's a lot of people that don't have smartphones. There's a lot of people who aren't like us, and they're not tech savvy. And like my mom, for instance, has an iPad. And if she had an iPad with a camera, she would probably use it all the time because she doesn't have a computer. She doesn't know how to use her point and shoot. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who are in her same situation who all of a sudden have this highly accessible device where they can take video and take pictures and then share those with their family in a way they never thought possible. So I think it's probably that it's not aimed towards us. We've had iPhones, you know, for years. I think it's aimed at people who maybe, you know, aren't ever going to own a smartphone, maybe not even a cell phone, and just use this as their primary computer. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I mean,
I'm just trying to get you to agree with me. That's the important
thing. I'm not going to.
No, no, you can stop there. Let's just move on. let's talk about the LTE briefly. Alex, I know you've spent some time with LTE turned on. Do you have an AT&T or a Verizon iPad?
I have Verizon. I went with Verizon this time. I've always been with AT&T. I've been with them since the first iPhone.
And did anyone actually buy the AT&T one?
I don't know anyone that did, and I think the reason is because, well, I got lucky. I was looking at the AT&T 4G map, and it's pitiful. Like, they don't have major, they don't have 4G coverage in most major cities. They don't even have it in Seattle, and Verizon does. And to me, it seems like Verizon is just way, way, way ahead of the game. And all the reviews I've seen, people have been raving about the data rate speeds.
There are a couple reasons why a Verizon iPad is the way to go, no matter what. First is personal hotspot, right? So the Verizon iPad will let you use personal hotspot, which is kind of, you know, creating a Wi-Fi network with your 4G signal for other devices to connect to. And the Verizon iPad will do that, and AT&T hasn't said that it's going to do that, you know, and it may never do that. But
well, I thought AT&T said they weren't going to allow it, at least not for now.
They said they're looking into it, but it took them how long? 3-4 years?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I wouldn't expect it to be free either once they did release
it. Right, and AT&T is still trying to roll their network out, so you can imagine this probably isn't even on their list right now. But Verizon's got personal hotspot. It was actually uncovered yesterday that you can actually take a AT&T micro SIM, put it in your Verizon iPad, and use AT&T 3G, HSDPA. You can't use HSDPA Plus. You can't use the LTE signal, but you can use 3G, which is still pretty good. So what practical situations
would that be useful in?
Oh my gosh, I'll give you a practical situation.
You go across the globe, you know, to a different country where they're using 3G
exactly.
GSM is the world standard, and Verizon is, you know, you're only going to use Verizon in the States. But the fact is, with the Verizon iPad, you can just get an AT&T micro SIM. If you go travel, pop it in, and you've got 3G anywhere.
And that's huge.
I thought the Verizon iPad would connect to the 3G network anyway in overseas. Just won't connect to 4G network.
I don't think that's true with the Verizon. I may be wrong.
Well, actually. Maybe that's why they have I can't remember, but I think that might be why they have it in there.
But in any case, I mean, even if you have to put a SIM card in, that makes this thing a traveler's dream device. And that's one of the reasons I got the LTE model, just because I wanted to have the radio signal in there. Because let's say you're going overseas, right? One of the things you're going to need are maps. And of course, data overseas on your iPhone is enormously expensive. But what a lot of people don't realize is GPS in these devices is free. Your iPad or your iPhone just read the GPS signals. So you can get like a really high quality set of maps, and then the GPS still works. You always know where you're going. And I actually used this on a trip last summer through Austria and the Netherlands on my iPhone. And to be able to do that with a big screen and be able to always know exactly where I am and to find things on a map is hugely, hugely valuable. So for anyone that's traveling, it's worth the extra, what is it, $129 to get one with the LTE built in. I would go Verizon too. I think that's kind of what we all recommend. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And even if you're a traveler, but even if you're just mobile a lot, like if you know you're going to go on vacation in the summer for a month, or you're going to be traveling a lot, even in the States, you know, you don't really know what you have until you don't have it. And it's a great thing to have. And the great thing about it is that you can just turn it off, you know, if you don't want it. It's not like a long-term commitment thing like your iPhone. So I can just get, you know, 2 gigs of data for $30 this month and then not renew it next month if I don't need it.
Yeah. And if you turn off the data, the GPS still works great. So you still get that free benefit regardless of if you have the data turned on. And I think that's immensely, immensely valuable. Let's talk about charging for a moment. Now, you guys probably haven't charged your iPads yet, have you? The new ones?
No.
Okay. Neither have I. And I wish one of us had. Of course, they come pretty much. Oh, you have?
Yeah, I have.
Did it take significantly longer because they packed so much extra battery into it?
The problem is that I just plugged it in at night before I went to bed.
Okay, so you're not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but the battery's been really good. I mean, I was on LTE last night for a few hours, and you know, I went out and used it extensively, and the battery has not even, you know, it stayed up, you know, for a long time. So I haven't really noticed anything.
Yeah, I'm not so much worried about the battery lasting. I mean, I think that it's going to get great battery life from everything I've been reading. But I'm more worried about the charging time. I know you guys are like, oh, you just charge it at night. And yeah, I could do that, but sometimes you got to charge it during the day, you know, like you're running out to do something or you're using it at an event or you're having it in a business meeting and it's like it needs to be charged. And my iPad 2 took forever to charge. I'm a little worried that the new iPad's going to take twice as long since they have what? They have essentially twice the battery jammed in it, right?
Almost like 75%, yeah.
Okay, so my estimation is it's going to take 75% longer to charge, which means it could take 5 hours to charge it, which is bollocks. To use a word that Leander would.
That is. Never mind the bollocks.
Well, hey, let's talk about new apps. So you have this beautiful Retina display, and one of the things you're going to notice immediately is like apps that haven't been upgraded to have Retina graphics, that to have Retina icons are going to look like they haven't been upgraded to have Retina graphics and have Retina icons. They're going to look kind of pixelated. Are there some good app recommendations that you guys know about that we could give to people to really get the most out of their new iPads at this moment? Yeah. Alex, let's start with you.
Yeah, there's tons of apps, actually. Apple has, if you go into the App Store right now, Apple has a apps for your new iPad section that has a lot of them that have been updated. But, you know, some great ones that I use personally, but, you know, there's apps like, you know, Twitter apps like Tweetbot and Twitterific have both, you know, the official Twitter app also have all been updated with Retina support. You know, for reading, you've got stuff like Instapaper. Instapaper was just updated for Retina. You've got stuff like Flipboard. Amazon's Kindle app has been updated. Facebook hasn't been updated yet, oddly enough. But there's a lot of apps that
along those lines. I know Pulse, a really popular app, has been updated. But if you go to update it, one of the very first things you see is do not download this update. So yeah, I guess like it's introduced errors or something, and they're warning everyone just to hold off.
Airfun?
What?
Oh, sorry. The new Pulse app, that is it broken for you too?
Yes, I didn't download it because you must have downloaded it right before they changed their little description, because I went to download it and then I saw the description. It said, do not update. And I was like, what a bizarre thing to say. So I guess it's broken somehow. Is that your experience, Buster?
Yeah, I added it and you can't add any feeds or anything to it. It's a big bummer. I was really depressed last night.
it's really broken. This was on Twitter this morning. Also, if you like open an article, it'll crash.
It's FUBAR'd. They need to get that fixed. Well, I spent some time playing Flight Control Rocket last night, which Flight Control is made by a company called Fireman's, and it was one of my favorite games on the iPhone and the iPad. A super fun game where you basically land airplanes on these airstrips and you have to direct traffic with your fingers. They released a new version called Flight Control Rocket, which has all these new dynamics. It's super fun. And the graphics, I have to say, look amazing. This is probably the first app that I used last night where I was like, wow, okay, now I feel like I'm using a Retina display. Everything's super sharp. It was just unlike anything I'd ever seen. I think that was my first wow moment where I was like, oh, wow, okay, this Retina display actually is a huge difference between the iPad 2. Did you guys get a chance to play that game?
No, what was it called?
Flight Control Rocket, yeah.
All right, I'm getting it right now.
It's like a buck.
I haven't gotten a chance to play that one yet, but the first game I did play for the Retina display was actually Namco's Sky Gambler's Air Supremacy app, which is what they demoed on stage at the Apple event.
Oh, right.
The jet fighter game. And I downloaded that right away because I wanted to see, you know, what they saw on stage, and I wanted to see what it was like. And it's gorgeous. I mean, it's incredible. You know, you're flipping around in the air and all the detail and the clouds. And that's where the Retina display really shines, is in moments like that when you're working in an optimized environment and everything is just made for it. It looks great.
Yeah, I think it's going to take us a couple months for all these developers to upgrade their graphics. I mean, for games that are designed to be vector, I mean, I think it's going to be a lot easier for them, but for guys that have to, you know, redo all the graphics in their game, I mean, my gosh, it's going to be a lot of work.
I've talked to developers and developers that haven't been working off Vector, even non-games. It's, you know, it's a good 4 days work for, you know, for you to go in and retina, you know, eyes. I don't know. Is that the word?
You coined it. Retinize.
Patent pending. But yeah, it's a lot of work for these developers to do this. And also you're going to be dealing with bloated, you know, not bloated, but you know, the app sizes are going to be increasing quite a bit, you know, doubling in most cases. I think there's a New York Times article, it can be almost five times more.
Wow.
And so when you have a universal app on the iPhone, you know, that's getting a Retina iPad update, that iPhone app is going to increase in size. It could double. So, you know, you have to take that into consideration. You know, like a game like Infinity Blade, it's going to go from whatever, 100 megs to 200 megs or whatever.
Oh, my gosh, it's probably like 500 megs to like a gig.
That's a
don't
gig
you think?
Now, yeah.
Yeah, like a gig, yeah. So, a lot of apps like that are doubling in size because of this.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. So maybe you should think about getting that 32 gigabyte version instead of the 16.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, let's talk about, just kind of wrap things up here, the differences between iPad 2 and iPad 3. And if it's worth upgrading, if you would have asked me if you should upgrade to the new iPad, before I had one, I would have hands down said, you absolutely need to. It's going to have this and that and this and that. It's going to be amazing. And I was reading all these hype articles. And now I'm more on the fence. I think you guys might be there with me. Leander, yeah. Have you noticed any huge differences between the iPad 2 and the iPad 3?
Well, I mean, like you were saying, you know, maybe it's a question of just not having the right applications yet. I mean, you guys were both just raving about these amazing games that looked absolutely astonishing on the screen. And, you know, like I've only had it for, you know, I haven't even had it for 24 hours. And I looked at some video and I looked at some pictures. And, you know, I mean, based on that experience, no. But I'm downloading the games you just recommended. I mean, if they look different, really different, you know, significantly different, then I would say yeah. Because, you know, when the software gets updated, you know, that's probably when we're going to see the difference.
Yeah, I think that's true. Buster, what do you think?
Actually, I'm writing an article on it. I don't think that you need to upgrade to an iPad 3 if you have an iPad 2. If you have an iPad 1, then yeah, sure. But you basically, it's a tablet device. It's a post-PC device. You're not supposed to be upgrading it every year. You don't buy a new iMac every year. So I don't think you have to go out and buy a new iPad.
Alex?
Yeah, I would kind of side with Buster, but then I would also probably say even further that if you're on the fence and you're really considering, should I upgrade? You know, I get a lot of these questions, you know, I'm really on the fence about it. I want to do it, but I'm not sure if I should. If you're on the fence about it, don't do it, because I think the people that really want it and will really appreciate it have already bought one. For the most part, I think that if you're on the fence about it, it's because you realize that it may not be the most amazing upgrade and maybe I shouldn't do it. So if you're having those kind of reservations, maybe you should go with that, because it really is, it's a great device and it's nice to be, you know, it's nice to have, but at the end of the day, my iPad 2, you know, still is great. You know, it's still a great device and it's still better than 99% of what's out there. So I don't know. If you're on the fence, I would strongly caution to maybe just not do it.
See, now, I'm kind of right on the other side of the fence, on the side of, yeah, you know, go ahead. But I think before, I would have been like, you know, I was like, yes, you need to do it. Now, I mean, the main draw, right, is the Retina display. And here's the thing about the Retina display is, let's say you do upgrade, you know, Pulse, and you do upgrade your news apps, and you do upgrade some of the other apps that you use. They're going to look good, but the photos that you view, web, you know, quality photos aren't going to look great because they're web quality photos. So the text is going to look really sharp. The application itself is going to look sharp, but the things that you view on the web really aren't going to look that much different on this new screen. So in that regard, I'm like, it kind of takes away from the Retina display. Unless you're going to be watching a lot of game or playing a lot of games, then it's like, okay, then you'd really get the benefit. But I watched some Netflix videos last night. Netflix, the app, looked great.
Oh, yeah.
But the videos themselves looked crap.
Poo.
Yeah. It was like, it was kind of a disjointing experience, right? Cause you're opening the Netflix app and you're like, ooh, saturation. It's so red. And then you play a movie and you're like, oh, pixels everywhere, you know, and this is broadcast in HD, you know, like, and the new iPad screen is so powerful that it shows you the flaws in yeah. those videos, because everyone needs to upgrade everything. Like, the videos need to be upgraded, the photos need to be upgraded. So in that regard, that kind of tempered my excitement for this new device. And then with the fact that it is noticeably heavier, it is noticeably thicker, I'm kind of like, you know, honestly, you know, the iPad 2, for if you can, you can get a refurbished one, a 16 gig or a 16 gigabyte version on Apple's website for $350 right now. I'm like, man, you know, my iPad with tax was almost $800. And granted, that had the LTE and the extra gigabytes in there. But, you know, $350 for an iPad 2, where if I handed you my new iPad, you may not be able to tell the difference in screen quality.
Oh, can we? I'm sorry. Can we talk about that real quick? Gizmodo did this hilarious thing that I almost wish we would have done. But they went around their office and they handed the iPad 2 to coworkers who had no real knowledge, you know, about Apple. And this was the day the new iPad launched, and they said, hey, this is the new iPad. You want to check it out? And they checked it out, and they had them describe what they saw, and they all loved it. They all thought it was amazing. It was the most glorious screen they'd ever seen.
That's a cool trick.
Yeah, I'd be pissed if they did that to me.
Yeah. See, I thought
that video was kind of stupid, because you're telling, you know, people who don't care about Apple, of course they're not going to know the difference between an iPad 2 and an iPad 3. The only people that will are the hardcore people that are going to scrutinize every aspect of it. So,
no, yeah, I mean, I understand that. But at the same point, it does shine a light on a bigger issue. That's just, we live in this kind of tech hype machine.
Totally. Where it's placebo effect, right? I mean, that's why we have double blind studies, because you hype it up and you tell them it's going to be amazing. And then when you hand it to them, you know, it's like, of course they're going to be like, oh, this is great. This is so good. And, you know, that's kind of the point, is like, it's not as dramatic of a difference as The Verge would have you believe. You know, like, you know, Josh Topolsky, you know, was really insanely happy with his new display. And yeah, it is. It's a nice display. But there's a big difference between saying it's a nice display than it's amazing. And I think we've all used it and we're like, yeah, it's good. Right? That's a big difference.
My mom wanted to get an iPad, because she's going to go traveling in England this summer, and she wanted something. She didn't want to cart her MacBook around because it's too heavy.
Yeah.
So she wanted a lightweight device. So I'm like, you know, let's get an iPad. And she was, when it came to, you know, should she get the iPad 3 or get the iPad 2? I told her to get the iPad 2. She got a refurbished iPad 2 for about $450, which, like you said, is $400 cheaper. Because she's probably not going to, you know, she doesn't care about the screen. She doesn't care about the 4G. She's using it mainly for traveling, and maybe it'll, you know, she'll use it around the house, but, you know, probably not as much as, you know, it's not going to be her main computing device. So it's just not, you know, for her, it made more sense to get the iPad 2.
Yeah, and I think that that's going to be the same scenario for a lot of people. I mean, there's always going to be guys like us. Dude, yeah, it's a lot of money. I mean, there's always going to be guys like us that need to have the newest and best. And, you know, it's like, there's no reason we need to have these extra features, but we convince ourselves that somehow we need them to survive. But, you know, for most people, I honestly would say stick with an iPad 2, especially if you don't have the money for an iPad 3. The new iPad. By the way, if you're looking for anything on the internet regarding the new iPad, try doing a Google search for that. Because every time they release an iPad, guess what? It's the new iPad, and that's what everyone calls it. So, it's honestly easier to call it the iPad 3 when you're doing Google searches. A lot of people are just calling it that, just so you know what you're talking about. It's like, if you're looking for wallpapers, do a search for iPad 3 wallpapers, or I guess Retina display wallpapers. Yeah. Of which there are a lot of great ones out there already. I was actually kind of surprised. Well, hey, guys. We went way over time today, but this has been a special episode of the Cultcast. So I guess that's to be expected. Normally, the Cultcast is the best 30-minute Apple conversation you'll hear all week. I'd say this one's probably like 45, maybe 50. But it's still the best, wouldn't you guys think?
Definitely.
We'll be back next Thursday, as we are every Thursday, with a brand new episode. Those episodes will, of course, be about 30 minutes. Alex, hey, it was really nice having you on. We hope to have you back on again.
For sure. Thanks for having me, man.
You didn't suck it nearly as bad as I was fearing you would.
Suck it,
Trebek. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Cultcast. We will see you guys next time. Hi, everyone. Airfun Elijah. I'm back. Normally, at the end of the show, I answered a funny outtake just to give you guys a good giggle, but this time I wanted to do something a little different. Before the show, we actually ended up having an impromptu, off-the-cuff discussion about Mike Daisy. For those of you that don't know, Mike Daisy is the guy behind the monologue, The Agony and Ecstasy of Steve Jobs. It's been an incredibly popular and powerful monologue that he's been given all over the United States. The monologue paints a powerful picture. You love your iPhone, you love your iPad, but what was the human cost to build those devices? How did they get the cost to be so cheap? In his monologue, Mike Daisy presents evidence of abuse, terrible working conditions, child labor, all based on his personal experience when he went on a trip to China to investigate how our devices are actually made. This American Life, the popular radio program from Public Radio International, had recently had Mike Daisy on to adapt a version of his screenplay for the air. They broadcast an episode, but recently retracted it, claiming some of Mike Daisy's first-hand accounts may in fact actually be fabricated. Our conversation revolves around the notion that yes, maybe the monologue isn't entirely true, but it focused Apple's attention on Chinese labor conditions and consumers too. It's done a lot of good. Does it matter that it may not be 100% true? Forgive the rawness of this discussion, we weren't planning on broadcasting it.
Did you guys get to listen? Should we talk about... I know we've already, I guess this is just iPad. Maybe you'll want to save this for next week, but it might be old then. But the whole Mike Daisy thing, are we going to talk about that or no?
I think we're just doing, this is going to be devoted to the iPad. But yeah, okay. I definitely got opinions about that. I mean, I was trying to work up on an editorial about it, and I've been, you know, really conflicted about what to write.
Did you listen to the retraction episode they posted last night?
No, did you?
Yeah. It was really defeating. I mean, Mike, you know, I don't know. I was trying to root for Mike before I started listening, and then hearing him talk and stuff, it's just, he really, you know, I understand where he's coming from with the whole theater thing, you know, as a performer, like I know what he means by his, you know, license he has, but the fact that he ran it on This American Life as a journalistic piece, it's really not a journalistic piece at all. But yeah. he's done some great stuff. I mean, he made this issue, you know, everybody knows about it now. But you know, he just didn't approach it the right way. And he lied a lot, and you know, it's kind of sucks.
It does, yeah, and that's unforgivable. But I think, you know, he's threw light on a really important issue, and he's he's really moved the
Yeah, and it's just sad that the most you know, compelling parts of his monologue are just made up, you know.
Yeah. Right.
He's a performer, though. I mean, you can hear it in his voice when he does it. I mean, he just relishes the sensationalism of it, you know. And but right.
Yeah. But if he'd been straight with NPR, you know, PRI or whatever, you know, the Ira Glass, he could have been straight about, said, look, you know, for the show, I sort of made this bits of shit up, and
right, yeah,
in trouble. They still probably would have did a show for him.
One of the comments I heard that actually I thought was really interesting was, someone was like, "Yeah, he has the, you know, the freedom to do whatever he wants to do creatively, but when you start using real people's names in those stories, he's like, at that point you're pretty much making up these stories, and everyone thinks they're real." So I feel like he should have made the embellishment more obvious, or he should have just straight up said, "Hey, this is partially fabricated for dramatic purposes."
Yeah, he could have said based on a true story, but then he went on MSNBC and said, "I saw these things, I saw these people," and he didn't.
Yeah, exactly. And he probably thought, I mean, who would ever be able to verify like my interpreters story? Well, like, yeah, how would you ever even find this person?
They're not going to find them.
Yeah.
And This American Life had the New York Times reporters on their episode, their retraction episode that did the iEconomy piece. And the guys were like, you know, we all heard this. We all heard Daisy's monologue, and we all knew it was bogus when we heard it. Like, anybody that's done reporting over in China, they were like, we all knew it was bogus. We were just, we wondered why nobody else had shined a light on it.
Huh.
Well, devoting a whole episode to a retraction is pretty unusual.
Oh, they've never done it before. And Ira opened the episode, and he was, you know, he sounded very upset, and he was like, we've never had to do this. We're really sorry about this, but because they really value, you know, their journalistic integrity. So,
well, that show, you know, they use a bit of like storytelling license too in other shows. I mean, you know, that's not to sort of say that, you know, they've lied, but it's one of those shows that, you know, relies on good storytelling techniques. And so, you know, I don't think they're a stranger to that, but you know, so in other words, you know, devoting a whole episode to this is like is a little bit of overkill for a show that does use, you know, sort of some storytelling techniques in its journalism. I just, you know, it makes me wonder whether Apple leaned on him because, you know, like you mentioned, Irfan, there's a defamation angle here.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know, but that's
I mean, yeah, for sure, especially in Apple's regard. I mean, look how strongly they've reacted to this. Like, you can tell they're offended.
Right.
It's like they're because they think this is really untrue, and they're doing everything they can to prove that to people because it damages their reputation.
Absolutely. Well, the strange thing is, you know, that what he said was basically true. It's all been reported by other people, but the fact that he gave it an eyewitness, he presented it like an eyewitness account, gave it much more power.
Yeah.
And
for
his
sure.
His show was really powerful.
It
dragged me to it, and I really didn't want to go. I was horrified when I found out it was 2 hours. I'm like, oh my God, how am I going to get out of it? And I, it was really funny. I mean, I laughed my head off for the first part, and then I was really moved in the second part.
Yeah. Did you shed some Waz tears?
No. Well, I was, I was really upset. You know, it was upsetting. I didn't cry, but I can see how Waz could have cried.
Well, you know, I was thinking about this last night as I was unboxing my new iPad and turning it on and getting it ready and stuff. And, you know, normally when you do that, it's like the whole magic of the Apple box and opening it and you smell those fresh Apple smells. And one of the things I actually could not get out of my mind the whole time was thinking about the fact that, you know, some group of Chinese people, like, hand-assembled this device. You know, they're getting underpaid. And, you know, here I have this shiny new device that I really like, but, like, it came at the expense of, you know, other people's, you know, living standards. And, you know, it's not like I like my iPad any less, but it's something that I never would have thought about before I saw Mike Daisy's show. And, you know, I think in that regard, it's done a lot of his monologue has done a lot of good in the world. And I don't think that should be negated by the fact that it might be partially untrue. I still think it's important what he's done. So I'm kind of in agreement with you on that angle.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think that's true. Yeah. The way the art moved everybody is definitely more important than whether or not it was 100% true.
And I think that was pretty much Mike's response in that blog post that he did. I don't know if it was on his website or something, but I thought he was really well spoken. I mean, that's pretty much exactly what he said. And I'm not saying that his lies or his embellishments, you know, were okay. But I mean, his defense was really good. He's like, hey, I'm not a journalist. I never claimed to be a journalist. You know, I'm an artist. And I'm a theater guy, and it's like my tools are very different than the tools of journalism. And you know, I think that what I did was okay because I was trying to speak about a bigger topic, a bigger point. And the only way to do that was to embellish. So does that make him right for doing it? I don't know, but
well, yeah. And in the theater context, what he did is okay. He could have said, you know, this is based on a true story. He, you know, there's a way that, you know, you should clarify more. But
yeah, that's why he could have just added one sentence would have made everything okay. That's
and I think he did that on purpose, right?
Well, even adding that in the theater wouldn't have made it okay because he put it on, you know, This American Life. That was the real issue here, is that he turned it into a journalistic thing that got him on MSNBC, and you know, he turned it into this thing that was real, like factual, and that's where the problem is.
Yeah, right. I guess it's kind of like going into a courtroom as an eyewitness, and then you give your testimony, and the guy, and then they find out it's not true, and you're like, well, I'm a drama guy. What did you expect? I was trying to give you the bigger truth of the situation. Right. I don't know if he's guilty. I wasn't even there.
I
was trying to speak about guilt in itself.
Right. That's the perfect analogy. That's exactly why, you know, it's so devastating.
Yeah. It definitely is going to affect his career.
Yeah,
People, like, you got people like Gruber that will just rain down an ungodly storm on him, and he, you know, it'll be hard for him to recover.
Well, he's doing his last two shows in New York today and tomorrow. In fact, he's probably performing one right now. And then it's supposed to go to Washington, D.C. for an extended run. So
he's going to have to wear a hockey mask so he doesn't get hit in the face with a giant tomato.
Let's see. Hey, you should put this into the podcast, you know.
I'm going to, actually. Great suggestion. If you guys don't mind, because no, I know no, it's kind no, of please. Off the cuff. I don't know.
I didn't sign off on that. I'm just kidding.
I'll just edit it. I'll just edit it. So you said, I don't know. I sign off on that. It's amazing what you can do. GarageBand.